I trust you all had a wonderful afternoon. As I did, I bonded with several people with a flat tire. Would you believe my tire had a stick in it this big? No, okay. Would you believe our hands were black when we finished? Well, there's a woman in this room named Joy. And we pulled into a gas station because the girls following us up to the Cave of the Wind said, I guess I should pick up my notes as I talk. The girls following us said, you know, you have a flat front tire or back tire. And I thought, my husband just got the car a week ago. How could it be a flat tire? And I thought, you know, he just does things like that, buys new cars with flat tires. And so I believed them because it was trustworthy friends who told me that. Well, sort of. And so we decided to go down the mountain and stop and get it fixed. And Joy looked, and I can't find Joy right now, but she looked and she said, I think that man with the red hat over there knows what to do with tires. So she goes bobbing over, and he says, oh, I have 3 Jeeps. You know, I can come help you. And so he came, and then at one point, she was putting air into the other tire, and he said, you don't do it with any authority. No, she was checking the gauge, and Elaine was putting air in the tire, and she wasn't doing it with authority. Do you know what that means? She was sort of walking over with the gauge and going, and Elaine says, no, when you hit that gauge to the tire, you have to do it with authority. Well, anyhow, we're sure we gave that man a wonderful story to think about on his way up to Breckenridge this afternoon. I wanted to tell you, Janice, that when I was a mother of preschoolers, I kept a vacuum cleaner in my living room all the time. Because when people came in, they either thought I was getting to it, I was in the middle of it. And let me just tell you, it's absolutely the only way to go. The vacuum cleaner was there. You know, it was bad when people came in and blew the dust off the vacuum cleaner. I lived in Boca Raton, Florida, and that's what I did, keep in my living room. And that is the truth. And I had a friend who was getting her PhD down at the University of Miami, and she had the hour and a half trip to travel from Boca Raton to the University of Miami. And Mary Lill said, I have taken up one of your tricks, Rachel. And I thought, what is she talking about? She said, I now keep a vacuum cleaner in my living room, too. And she said, it works. People think you're going to be working or you've been working or something's going to take place with that. Now, someone said to me today, what's your trick for shower caps? Now, I just like to give these little hints along the way. I spend a lot of hours in hotel. No, that didn't sound good. I go, did not sound like something a retreat speaker should say, did it? I'm in there witnessing. We get a lot of shower caps in our home. In fact, I have a whole Schwann gallon and a half bucket full of shower caps. And what you do with them is they are just the best thing for covering over bowls. You know, at Thanksgiving, you just throw them over the bowl. You know the ones you buy that go over, they're plastic and they're hard and they break. But these shower caps are fantastic. I have people who have collected shower caps for me from all over the world. I have a friend who brings me, I think when he comes to visit us, he brings me a shopping bag of shower caps. And I said to him, I said, Richard, how do you get so many shower caps? And he said, it's simple. I just go up to the maid and tell her I need more than what she leaves in the room to take care of my friend. I have found that there is one hotel in Budapest, Hungary, actually, that gives the biggest shower caps. They will go over a salad bowl this big. It's the Hotel Galart in Budapest. Have you been to Hotel Galart in Budapest? Didn't you live in Vienna? Oh, I mean, it doesn't mean because you lived in Vienna you had to go to Budapest. Excuse me. I mean, if you lived in Vienna, weren't you in Budapest? I mean, after all.
I went to Budapest, but not to that hotel. Sorry.
Oh. They might charge extra for the big hotel, for the big shower caps. I don't know. Missionaries took us there. I tell you, I think it's going to be a long night. I sat at this table for dinner. You wouldn't believe it. I mean, it was quite a table. I told them that I would share all of their stories. They went right down the questions. Boy, they whipped them out. Cindy, that leader, just kept them moving. I think she felt a little pressure. But how many of you got to question number four? Hey! How many skipped all the rest? Okay. I realized it wasn't question four I wanted you to do anyway. Once it happened, I realized it wasn't the one. But that's okay. I hope you did question four. I think question four, Cindy gave me her questions because I didn't remember what question four was. Cindy, you don't have these in order. Oh, my. I'm going to see. Question four. How could you be beautiful in the biblical sense with friends? One of the gals at the table did say, they said all kinds of things. But one of the gals said something that in the workplace, oh, where is she? I need her to say that to us. I'll mess it up if I tell it. I never was good at jokes or telling someone else's story. Oh, well. Anyhow, it made me think of something. She was saying how you may be standing up in the workplace for something that you believe strongly. There she is. What did you say?
Are you sure it was me?
I think it was. And see, it came from this side of the table. Cindy said something, and then you said something over there. Okay, she was sitting here. Okay, just tell us. Oh, you want to tell us who you are?
My name's Polly. Base.
Polly. Don't you love that name, Polly? Isn't that just the cutest little name? Polly. I like the name Polly.
I was telling Rachel about my family owns a family business.
Yeah.
And I was telling her it's an office, and it's very, what I'd call volatile. It's very violent. You don't feel very safe as a woman there. And I even said you can sometimes even feel emotionally raped. And this is my family, and these are my brothers, and you know my whole family that works in there. And I said, one of the things that I think I can do for them is just show them love.
She's reflecting already. See, she was just reflecting, and it was sort of like, yeah.
Thank you.
How could you be beautiful in the biblical sense? And she just knew that that would be just to show love. She just decided to turn the whole situation around and show love, and she's the only Christian. And she's God's peace there. She's God's woman there in that office. And, you know, it just came back to me, a little story. Our son is an intern for a financial consultant. And he worked in asbestos removal to put himself through college. Do you know what a rotten job that is? You wear a mask, you wear everything, and you go into a hole for hours. You get 5 hours in the hole, and it always has to be at nighttime because they can't be removing asbestos in the daytime because it flies. And so he did all the schools around town, and he was with an asbestos removal company. And he became the whole boss in there. And you make really good money, and you work like a dog. And all the guys who worked with him called him Beaver Cleaver because he didn't quite use the same language they used. And so they called him Beaver Cleaver. And we're real proud of what he did. And there was one guy in the group who became a Christian. His name is John. And John counts on Mike Kenny. And Mike Kenny's 22 years old. John's 36. And John was going through a divorce, and he called Mike Kenny. And he said, we really do have a problem at work, Ken. He said, we all make lots of money. Our boss makes a lot more money than we make. And we get a lot of money under the table. And I claim my taxes on it, and I never have the $7,000-$8,000 I have to do when I claim it on the IRS. I don't have it to pay because we don't know how to manage our money. Do you think you would meet with the owner of the company and me one day for lunch? And my son said, sure. I'd be glad to work up a financial plan for the company. I'd be thrilled. This will make Steve Music very happy. If I do it, that's his boss. And they called up my son. The boss called him up and he said, could you meet us for lunch at this particular place? And my son knew that it was a strip joint. And my son, what happened is John went to the boss and explained to the boss who, he said, you know, he was the whole boss. His name is Kenny Crabb, and we called him Beaver. And the guy says, oh, yeah, that guy, yeah, that guy. And I think my son said, I'll meet you after you have your lunch. I'll meet you back on the site after you have your lunch. And my son came away, and he's met with the man several times. The man set up a whole defined benefit plan for his employees, and it's been wonderful as far as my son's business. But you know, that man was probably testing him to see if he would meet at the place the man chose for lunch. And my son knew it was going to be a big account if he got it. And we were just so proud of him because he only had worked in the company 2 months. This was in July. 2 weeks. And he did that. And I thought, that's a way to show in him, for him it was movement. For a man it's movement. For a woman it's beauty in the workplace. And when she said that, it just triggered this thought about Kenny. And we also talked a lot in our questions about where did you learn about beauty? My husband and I took 6 single women away for a weekend. We used to have a home in Summit County. We sold it. But my husband and I took 6 gals, single gals away for the weekend and asked them various questions because we wanted to know about single women. And so we just spent the whole weekend with these gals. And the questions, the things that they said to us just opened our eyes because we were never single. I met Larry when I was 12 years old. I married him when I was 21 years old. I went from living with my folks, living in a college dormitory, to living with him. And I never feel I was a single person. And I really know there's special things in a single person's life. And one of the gals said, I would have done anything in the world if my father would have taken me shopping. My husband said we came home from that weekend and he quickly called up his associate who had 2 little girls and he says, take them shopping, take them shopping. And I remembered a memory. My father took me shopping. My father took me shopping every year to buy Capizio shoes. And you could only buy Capizio dance shoes at my time in a ladies' dress shop. They didn't have these Capizio shoe stores. And we had to go in the Little Miss shop in order to buy Capizio shoes. And I remember this as a wonderful memory in my life because my father would give me a lecture on the poor arch supports of Capizio shoes. And I would sit and listen to the lecture because it happened every time I wanted Capizio shoes. And everyone was wearing Capizios. In fact, there were people wearing imitation Capizios because they only cost $5.98. My daddy bought me the real Capizios for $10.98. And I would listen to this lecture because my father's real big on arch supports and after all, he was 40 years old when I was born. You know, he's big on arch supports and the right kind of hose and, you know, back braces and, you know, things like that he was big into. And I would get the lecture and I would get home with my Capizio shoes. And it was so interesting because we had a gal in our counseling program who bought a new dress and wanted to someone to see it. So she came over to my husband's office, knocked on his door, and she came in and she did a few twirls for him. And he admired her, her dress. And at the banquet at the end of the year, she spoke on his behalf. And she said, I got a new dress, and I wanted someone to see me in it. And someone who would be like my father, but not like my father. My father never cared if I got a new dress. He didn't care. And she said, I went in and I twirled around in my new dress. And she said, Dr. Crabb told me how wonderful I looked and how beautiful the dress was. And she said, I never had anyone say that to me. And she said something really valuable that night at that banquet to me. And she said, I could trust Dr. Crabb's heart when he told me I had on a beautiful dress because I know Rachel Crabb has his heart. That was one of the nicest things anyone has ever said. They trust my husband because I have his heart. And one of the gals in our group said she loved, she showed off her clothes to her father. We had a gal who worked for us, and she had gotten some new outfits because my husband told her he thought he loves navy blue skirts and white blouses. Now, who in this room cannot wear a navy blue skirt and a white blouse? My husband's favorite outfit in the whole world. I don't know if some little choir came to town with navy blue skirts and white blouses, you know, but that's his favorite outfit in the whole wide world. And whenever I know he's feeling a little low, all I have to do is put on a pair of, you know, blue shorts, even blue shorts, anything blue on the bottom and white on the top is just like, whoo! That is like the picture of femininity. So if you saw me last Sunday at church, I had on little blue shorts, which I didn't know I was going to have. He came walking in the door at 10:36, and we went running out the door, and I wasn't sure what when he was going to come in, so I had on some little linen shorts and a white blouse, see, because he was coming home, and then we came to church, and so if you saw me last Sunday, I had on little blue shorts and a white blouse. I put a sweater over the blouse, so it sort of blended. But that's his favorite outfit. So he said to this gal, he says, you would look really nice if you had a white shirt and blue skirt. And then, you know, buy jackets to go with the outfit. And she did. She went shopping. And she and her roommate invited us over for dinner. And she had all the outfits laid out on her bed. And I had never seen her do this. And she came out in each one and she would twirl around. And Larry and I would clap. And she'd twirl an extra little twirl. I had never seen her act that way. Isn't it amazing how when you bring beauty out of someone, how they shine? How they shine when you bring beauty out of someone? No, that wasn't the way I was going to start. But these girls, I mean, you know, Janice needed the hint about the vacuum cleaner in the living room. And I mean, we had to really help that out. And maybe there's some of you here who needed that hint. And I am just most willing to give hints like that. I've been in your shoes, and I am so thankful I'm not. I really thought I was a crummy mother. And I say that. My husband's a wonderful father. We should have had 9 million kids just so he could be their father. When it came to me, and my boys heard me say that because my boys came to a mother-son banquet one time with me. I spoke about Hannah and Samuel at the mother-son banquet. Of course, who do you speak about at a mother-son banquet? And my sons heard me say that I wasn't a good mother, and they jumped. They were so mad at me. And they said, you were a terrific mother. But what I mean by that when I say I was not a good mother is then I taught 3, 4, 5-year-olds in the preschool nursery situation, and I did so much more for those kids than I ever did for my own. And I felt guilty, and I felt badly. Now, my kids had a wonderful childhood because we had a swimming pool, and I used to give them we lived in Florida, and everyone has a swimming pool. It's no big deal. And I used to give them paintbrushes and buckets, and they would be able to go out and dump water. I mean, they didn't have any clothes on. And they would paint the house every day. They painted the house. They'd paint the sliding glass doors with this paintbrush and water. I'd get them the water out of the swimming pool, and they'd just paint the house. So they had a wonderful childhood. I heard if I wanted if I wanted to get anything done, I got one of these big refrigerator boxes, and I took all their clothes off, and I put finger paint and them in the box while I sewed. And they just, you know, you just stuck them in the bathtub after that, see? But they just finger painted in the box, on the walls. It was wonderful, but, and I did that with the nursery school kids, too. You just took off all their clothes and put them in. The parents started to report me. You see, I have a problem up here. Cheryl, come here. Just come here, Cheryl. She did to that house. And not only that, you know, I thought of another trick. When my children were little and when Cheryl lived with me, I would give them a roll of masking tape. The cheap rolls, 3 for $1.
Don't tell them, Rachel.
So Cheryl, when she came to live with me, I would put a roll of masking tape on her arm, too. And I would say, Cheryl, you just masking tape anything you want in this house. This tape is so cheap it won't take the paint off or anything. And my kids would masking tape, you know, down the hall, around Cheryl. I mean, they wore it like a bracelet. And if they woke up in the morning and didn't have their bracelet or masking tape, it was disaster. Cheryl was the same way. If she woke up in the morning and didn't have her masking tape, it was tough. And,
Are you going to tell about when they put it around my mouth?
My kids got wise. And they said, this is Cheryl. What I want to tell you is, I tell a story, and Cheryl has heard, Cheryl's lived with us, so she knows the story.
She's lived some of them.
She's lived. I, at this present moment, as of last Saturday, have no one living with me. I mean, my husband. Oh, my children are still there, too. My son and his wife are still living there because they didn't get to close on their house. And so they're still there, too. So that's why I'm away this weekend. And I stayed in Chicago extra long because the girl who lives with us was moving out and my son and his wife were moving out. And I thought, I've helped enough people move. Anyway, Cheryl has heard all the stories and has seen the life in our home. In fact, in this wonderful little book called The Personal Touch, Cheryl wrote an epilogue because she was a woman who was going through a divorce who lived with us. But Cheryl knows stories that I'm not telling. And she sits here and starts to laugh because it's like, Rachel, you're not telling the rest of the story. Now, whoever was doing the Paul Harvey thing last night, they told the rest of the story. Cheryl is upset because I'm not telling the rest of the story. And she sits down there and she just pictures what the rest of the story is because she's lived it. Okay, Cheryl, now they all met. This is Cheryl Jones. Cheryl Jones lived with us when she was going through a bad, unbeautiful time in her life. She called me from...
I came here and talked to you.
But you called me from the Northeast then.
Oh, yeah. I was home for Christmas in the Northwest. Yeah.
In the Northwest. And she came over and talked to me. I had asked her, I was director of women's ministries at our church, and I said, Cheryl, I want you to be the director of hospitality, the coordinator of hospitality for the church. And she couldn't believe I had asked her. So she came over and she said, I need to tell you what's going on in my life. And I said, but the Lord told me that you are going to be the coordinator of hospitality. And I care what's going on in your life, but just... Are you making faces?
Not
just because you're married to an evil man doesn't mean you cannot be the coordinator of hospitality. And so Cheryl came to live with us during a period of her time, of her life, when that was happening. So she does know a lot more of the story. But I want you to meet Cheryl, because when you hear someone laughing, it's because she's thinking of stories that haven't been told. And they will never be told, will they, Cheryl? Thank you. It's just I heard her down there laughing, and I just had to get this off my mind. Each of us has a story to tell. Each of us has a life that tells a story. We can think of our story from 0 to 5, 5 to 12, 12 to 18, 18 to 30, and 30 up. And we all do have a story to tell. Just as Janice was saying when her mother went into that little study with a neighbor, they all were so busy telling their story they didn't get to the God's Word, but see, God's Word is telling a story. And who really listens to you? As a little girl, who really knew you? Who listened to you? Have you had someone in your life who's listened to you? Our lives tell a story, and it's sort of like a novel or a biography or a made-for-TV story. It has three parts. It has the beginning tension point. It has the process, development, and unfolding, the process of unfolding or development. And the third part of the story, of course, is the conclusion. And so many of us have a beginning tension point where it is our alcoholic father, our shame in failing a grade at school, our husband who had an affair, our sexual abuse, or something that's troubling us. And the process and the unfolding of that is how we handle the story that's being told. And in our conclusion, our finale, or the outcome, if we've handled that part of our story well, we can live like a good Christian. And if we've handled it poorly, we don't live like a good Christian. And how each of the three parts differ depends on whether it's the visible story we're dwelling on or the invisible story we're dwelling on. That all determines the three parts of the story. Are you dwelling on the story from you being the point? Or are you dwelling on the story from God being the point? The invisible story looks something like this. In the beginning tension, it has the three parts. The beginning tension began in the garden. We were kicked out with Adam and Eve. We were kicked out of the garden. And ever since we've been kicked out of the garden, we've been trying to get back in. We've been kicked out of the garden. And God says, in John 14:2, he says, "In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. If it were not so, I would have told you." And I heard one of the sweetest stories. Biblically based, unbiblically based, you judge, but it's a terrific story. I was at a Bible study group in Florida with one of the girls who were very, very close to. And the pastor's wife was teaching the study. And it was a wonderful study in South Florida. And we were finishing up the book of Deuteronomy, where we were talking about Moses' song. And she got talking about all the lonely people in that St. Petersburg, Tampa area, Florida, all the widows, all the people alone, and how the night is the loneliest time. And then she took us to Job, where she said there will be songs in the night. And at that point, Ruthie took her elbow and stuffed it into my ribs, and she said, "Rachel, since you don't sleep, I'm going to play music in your room all night tonight." And when I came home from Florida, Larry and I played music, Christian music. I mean, if I hear Beside Still Waters one more time. On a CD, we played all night and just had it repeat and repeat. And you know what? We slept with the songs in the night. That wasn't the point. That was just one of the alleys Donna was going down when she was teaching this lesson. Another alley she went down was she had a sister who was very, very sick, colon cancer. And Donna and her husband, pastor of a church, and things. When the woman got colon cancer, her husband walked out on her, her three children abandoned her, and her sister took her in.
her sister and her husband. They were exhausted because they didn't want to, you know, they felt she was so abandoned, they didn't want to put her in any home or anything, and she was miserable. So they decided to go away for a weekend, and they got a sister sitter. And while they were away, the sister attempted suicide. And they came home. The sister sitter found her in time to get her to the hospital. And Donna said something really sweet to her. She said, "My dear sister, the Lord is preparing a mansion for you. He's building your building. And in that city, he's building a mansion for you in the city. And it isn't finished yet. And it's not your time to go. So when you go before it's your time, because you've instigated it, he doesn't have your mansion finished for you." And my sister has had a housekeeper for 20-some years named Gladys. And Gladys is a wonderful one. We had the family reunion for my parents' 65th wedding anniversary at my sister's home in Pepper Pike, Ohio. We all had sweatshirts with an imaginary logo on the back, and we made up everything that said my parents' name, Lankford, on the bottom. And Gladys even wore one as she waited on us, because she just feels she's part of the family. Gladys had a husband named Bill. And Bill was real sick, and I just heard this story from Donna in Florida. And I said to Gladys, "How's Bill?" And she says, "Miss Rachel, he's just so ready to go to be with God. He's so ready to go." And I said, "Gladys, you know what the problem is? God hasn't finished building his mansion yet. That's why he hasn't gone." And Gladys made no reaction. And when my brother-in-law came home, she said, Dr. Martin, Bill's going to go when his mansion's ready." Bill was a bricklayer. And he built the walls in their church. The whole thing was brick. And Bill had built the whole church, her husband. My brother-in-law was the only person to go speak who was not of the particular race of this congregation. And he spoke about Jeremiah building the walls. And he spoke about Bill up there in heaven helping with the next person's mansion, building the walls. Isn't it funny how sidetracks go somewhere sometimes? Now, I know that has really no biblical basis. It does. In a way. But we all want to build our cities, and he's building our city for us. In Genesis 4, I want you to look at Genesis 4. Of course I want you to look at Genesis something, don't I? Our Sunday school class is doing Genesis 2, so it works out real well. Genesis 4 and verse 12. Now Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden. And Cain, of course, was kicked out. And the curse of Cain was that he would be a vagrant. Look at verse 12. Let's just read it. "When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth," God told Cain. And what's the very next thing Cain did in verse 16? Look at this. Cain thought, "You're not going to tell me what to do, God. I'm not going to be a wanderer." So Cain went out from the Lord's presence, and he lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Some translation says, and he settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. What's the first thing Cain did when God said, "You will no longer be a city builder"? He went and built a city. And so many of us are building a city. Back, the beginning tension in the invisible story is we've been kicked out of the garden. And ever since we've been kicked out of the garden, we've been trying to get in and build a city for ourselves. One our way. And God tells us, I'm building you a city. In Revelation, he says, I'm building you a holy city where there will be no more tears, no more crying. I'm building for you a holy city. It's true of all of us. We're city builders. But you see, that's the beginning tension. We've been kicked out of the garden, and we're not leaving. We want to make things just right for ourselves here. We're going to build our city. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. I apologize to the singers. The process, point two, in the invisible story, the development or the unfolding of the invisible story, is shown in God's Word. He is the point, we're not. And we become so selfish, and we make ourselves the point, and this whole world has to revolve around us. I was brought up in a home where I was the fourth of five children, and I do know that the world in my home did revolve around me. The nickname for me in the home, and some of you may have nicknames, and some may not be very flattering, like we had one at our table today, her nickname was Crybaby. There are people who have nicknames. My nickname in my family was Sweet Petunia. And I thought that was nice. And my husband used to say to me, I hate what your brothers and sisters have done to you. And I said, what do you mean? He said, as your mother would say, you think you're a posy. And you think you're helpless, and you think you can't do anything. But he said, Rachel, you can do anything you want to do. And he said, get out there and do it. And I said, oh, but I'm a posy. I can't. He was so mean to me. He told me to get out there. I could do it. One time I decided to drive across the country a little ways. He was in Memphis, Tennessee, speaking at Adrian Rogers' church there, First Baptist of Memphis. And one of the associate pastors, they have about 15, and one of the associate pastors said to him, well, where are you going? He says, well, my wife's going to have me meet her in Springfield, Missouri. He said, but you don't live in Springfield, Missouri. He says, no, she's driving across. I'm just going to fly out, and she's going to hit me at the Springfield airport, and we're going to go on with our plan. And someone said, you let her drive across the country by herself? My husband said, let? Do you know my wife? You don't let her do anything. She does it. And this man said, well, I wouldn't even let my wife drive across Memphis. And my husband said, your poor wife. So, you see, sometimes our image of ourselves, what we think about ourselves, reflects in how we... Oh, we reflect what we think of ourselves. Let's put it that way. If we think of ourselves as a little helpless posy, we don't do anything. We just have to have everything done for us. And then I found out the petunias are hardy. I planted some. They loved the scorching sun. They got long and lanky. Lost their leaves, but they love being a petunia. And I found out the petunias weren't bad. So my whole image of myself changed. I was now hardy and ready to go. I was no longer helpless and hopeless. Can you ever picture me as helpless and hopeless? Oh, come on now. I was afraid. You know, I'm probably the only person who got through college prep in high school without having to take speech? Because I wouldn't talk in front of anyone. And the reason I wouldn't talk in front of anyone, well, I wouldn't even try out for anything. I wouldn't do anything because I was afraid of everything. You see, I might get blackballed. Do you know what blackballed is? Mm-hmm. Everyone puts the white ball in, and all of a sudden they say, oh, it's Rachel Langford throwing that black one. We don't want her in our group. I never went out for one sorority anywhere. I may have got the invitations because I let them think I was cool. But if I got an invitation to rush a sorority, it was like, whoa, baby. There's going to be someone there who's going to blackball me. And I'm not going to take that chance. No way. And so I made myself the point. And I put a nice little wall of protection around myself, so that no one would get in. And I was the point. I was going to protect myself. No one was going to be given the opportunity to blackball me. I mean, I wasn't going to give them the opportunity. And I became the point. But you see, when you're in part of the invisible story, you realize that you're not the point. How you handle things is not the point. It's how it's been handled for you already. That's the point. Another part of the invisible story in the conclusion is the Lord is bringing us to Himself to be with Him forever. We're just small bit players in His story. Where we fit into the larger story, where we see that we reflect God's beauty to neighborhood children, to people around us, to our family, the way we fit into His story will be the point of joy in our lives. I told you about Mrs. Loazzo bringing me a purse, and you saw my beautiful purse this morning. That was a supernatural intrusion into my life. That woman giving me a purse. Now, when I was the age that I received the purse, I did not realize that it was a supernatural intrusion into my life. But I now have looked back on my life and I said, this is a supernatural intrusion. This woman gave me a whole view of beauty and a whole view of things. All because she brought me a little purse from Israel. This woman has brought me, I have everything this woman has brought me from around the world. I have a little mirror that's made out of ivory. And it's just this little tiny mirror. And it's gorgeous. Probably the ugliest thing you've ever seen, but it's gorgeous. And I call that a supernatural intrusion into my life. A glimpse of the big story. And I didn't get a glimpse of that big story, the larger story, but I now know that that's what it was. Several weeks ago, Larry and I were on, Larry's on Midday Connection out of Chicago Moody radio station. And several weeks ago, Andrea Fabry, the hostess of Midday Connection, asked if I would come on with him. And so we always have to give our title. We're either on the radio on Mondays or Wednesdays. And so we had to give our title on Friday, and Larry, I said, oh, Larry, I'll trust you to give the title. I'll just wing it with you. And he gave the title of Supernatural Intrusions in Our Life. As we looked back over our life, where we look back and we see supernatural intrusions, memories that gave us a glimpse of the bigger story. The larger story. And we got on, and what happened is that weekend, the hostess of the radio station, her husband, also hosts an open mic program. His name's Chris Fabry. Andrea and Chris went away for the weekend, and when we got on, we talked for about 15-20 minutes before we're on the air, and she said, I Chris and I went away for the weekend, and we did your topic of supernatural intrusions in our life. And she said, we've never talked to each other that way before. And she said, it was the most fantastic weekend. You know, we have five kids. We're a little busy. Five kids under seven. And she said, plus they each host a radio program, you know, daily on Moody. And she said, we were, you know, a little busy, and we just decided to do supernatural intrusions. I trust that the supernatural intrusions were the five kids. But I want you to think back on some new supernatural intrusions in your life. On Wednesday nights after my husband teaches core class, we invite certain letters of the alphabet over for dinner. And we have alphabet soup. No. This past Wednesday night we had AG&L. AG&L came to dinner. And we asked them to share with us some supernatural intrusions in their life. Oh, what an uplifting thing it was for us to hear supernatural intrusions. When you see the hand of God, as you look back, you realize it was something like that. I'll share a supernatural intrusion that I shared with them, and I shared it on the radio program. My husband and I, he was a graduate student when we married each other. My husband and I met when we were 12. At 16, we set our wedding date, and we weren't married till we were 21. But at 16, he knew he had to do 2 years of high school in one in order to get a year ahead of me to get gone with this life. So he did 11th and 12th grade together in high school in order to get a year ahead of me and get moving with his life so that we could get married on time. And, you have to sort of arrange for some of these things. May have been a supernatural intrusion. We got married. See, here's how I believe you should get married. You should take your birth date and his birth date, and then you should either add them up, like my birthday's August 3rd, my husband's is July 13th, and so you add it up, that means you should get six married on the 16th of June. Because his is July, mine's August, that means we should go back a month and get married the 16th of June. And so we picked the 16th of June, 1968. Well, it's real good we didn't get married the 16th of June, 1968, because our son was born on the 27th of June, 1968. So we got married on the 18th of June, 1966. See, you have to switch the letters around a little bit. And the numbers around. So that's how I, you know, when someone comes to me and says, do you think we should get married? I say, well, let's see what, if the date falls on a Friday or Saturday. And then we'll be able to know if you should get married. Was that an alley? It was just an information for you. Just a little alley. And she thought it was a dead end. Well, then you shouldn't get married. You know, what happens if you add 21 and 32? Oh, you know, 21 and 30. You get 51. Well, then you have to figure out which month you want to pick to go 12 more days into it. You know what I mean? It gets really pretty complicated, but I handle it real well. I'm 22 days into it. I can handle those things. So if you have a question, just call me. I had a girl who comes from Australia. She was in our counseling program, and I don't know, I figured out that she should marry this guy on April the 10th, and she said, but we're just friends. And she said, you know, his mother and my mother are best friends, and he's coming over to go back to Australia with me, but we're going to see the United States. And I said, well, I think you're going to get married. And she said, no, we're just going to visit all our friends here in the United States, and we are not going to get married. And I said, well, if you do get married, you have to get married on April the 10th, because, you know, when you add up the date, you're... She called me long distance from Australia. And she said, I'm really upset, Rachel. She said, we're getting married April the 9th. She didn't listen to me. Haven't heard from that woman since. Where was I? Okay, anyhow, supernatural intrusions. Supernatural intrusions. My husband and I were at the University of Illinois. We got married 18 days after I received my Bachelor of Science degree. He already had 1 year at University of Illinois out of the way, and so we could get married. And he was in a second year graduate program in the PhD program at the University of Illinois. And I went out and I got a job teaching. And then we had kids. And the Lord knew that we were supposed to have children at that point. Because, you see, we would have been making so much money, it would have blown your mind away. My salary and his fellowship together would have just been astronomical. I think it was close to $9,000. And the Lord said, this couple cannot handle $9,000. They need to have a baby, and they need to make $4,500 for the year. And so we made $4,500. Now, people who aren't this age don't understand that you were only paying rent of $85, right? You lived through it. You were paying rent of $85 a month in this huge, fantastic, you know, yeah, big couple baths. And then they raised the rent $5 the next year. And you bought hamburger all the time. Regular price was 39 cents a pound. On sale, a quarter. Gas, if you bought $2 worth of gas, you got a free glass. I have the most beautiful collection of glasses that came from the gas station because I bought $2. I do too. I've saved them because I think they're going to be collector's items. $2 worth of gas, a free glass. They enticed you to buy gas at this corner store. We didn't get the pans or anything. Huh. Vera got her gas at a better place than I did. She got meatloaf pans. I wouldn't have one. I did get silverware, though, at the grocery store. With the wooden handle, I still have it. Just packed it up last week when we sold our mountain home. Just packed that baby up and said, I don't think I want to see this again as long as I live. Anyhow, we had no money. I knew where it was. It was called No Money, Honey. And I saw this gorgeous harvest table, rock maple, for $105 or $15 in the Penny's catalog. And I said, Larry, this table is a has to be. $105, I think it was. This table, there would be no other table in the world that would fit in that kitchen except this harvest table. We can drop the leaves during the day. At dinner time, flip them up. Have this huge table. Down again. Little table, big table. And I said, we need this harvest table. So we went down to JCPenney's catalog. And I said, I want the harvest table today. They said, no. If it's listed in the catalog, you don't get it till it comes. And I said, but I just got a JCPenney's charge card, and I need to have the table. We got no percentage off if we bought the first item. You know, here, Mervyn's, you go over 15% off if you get a charge card. No money off, and they said, go up to the furniture department and see what he has. So we went trekking up to the furniture department with these two babies, and we said, we have to have that harvest table downstairs. He says, here's the catalogs of all the tables we have up here in this department. You can get any of these tables. And they were all sitting on this little table. All these catalogs. The table was covered with ashes. You were allowed to smoke in stores at that time. It was covered with ashes. And I sort of looked down under the catalog and I said, all these books, you know, of tables? I said, this table. Look, Larry, look at this table. And Larry didn't know what a rock maple table was. He knew nothing. He was just along for the pang. And he said, I said to the guy, what about this table these catalogs are on? And he said, that got misplaced. It belongs down the catalog department, and someone didn't want it. And there it is, and you can have it for $60. I got it for $60. You know what's in my son's house in Texas, in Bryan College Station, Texas?
that $60 table? And I said, you ever hurt that table? You ever say you don't want that table? Murder would be on my mind. But you see, when I look back, I say, I wanted that table so badly, I didn't even pray about it. But I call that a supernatural intrusion in my life. Or I saw God working and he said, you know, she needs to be encouraged today. She needs that table for $60 because that is all the money they have. Have you had God work in supernatural intrusion? I want to tell you one of the stories. I want to tell you two of the stories from the other night with the students. One gal, I wish she were here because she could tell it so brilliantly. And I think she would tell it because it was just overwhelming. She woke up one morning and she lived in the state of Washington in Portland. Seattle. And she's heard the Lord very visibly say to her, I want you to go to Walla Walla today. And she said, I'm not going to Walla Walla, Washington today. I'm not going. I want to stay in Portland. Seattle. Cheryl, I was getting mixed up because of you. She comes from
both places.
Right. She went to college in one and lived in the other. Okay. And she said she had a lady who she prayed with who was blind. And the lady called her up and said, my brother, who doesn't know the Lord, has just had a heart attack, has to be operated on in... No, you thought, see. But God was going to move her all over the state. Portland. And she thought, God told me to go to Walla Walla, but we'll go down to Portland. And the lady and she made a plan that the lady would talk quietly to the rest of the family, and this gal was supposed to zero in on the one that she was not talking to so she could present the gospel. And they left that day, and the brother went into the operation, and he said, I don't believe in your God. I don't care if I go to hell. And they were heartbroken. But in the meantime, one of the people out in the waiting room said, I want to have the assurance that if anything were to happen to me, I'd step on shore and find it heaven. I'd touch a hand and find it God's. I'd breathe new air and find it celestial. I'd wake up in glory and I'd find it home. I want to know that when I die, I'll go to heaven. I want that assurance. And this gal talked to that relative, and that relative will step on shore and find it home. They left the hospital very discouraged. I don't know how far the cities are from each other. They got back to Seattle, and the lady said, you know, I want to go to Walla Walla. And this gal said, you know, Walla Walla, I was supposed to go there hours ago, and now I'm supposed to go to Walla Walla. So she said, the woman wanted to see someone in prison in Walla Walla. So she went over to Walla Walla, to the big penitentiary, and this woman wanted to see someone, and this gal said, well, I know two people who are in there. I think I'll go and see the two people who are in there. The one person, you're going to visit one at a time. So this woman had already had all the security clearance because she had been there many times, this woman who was blind. This gal who was driving her had never been there. And so she filled out a paper to visit someone, and she thought, I don't want to visit that person. May I have another paper, please? And she said to the security guard, I want to see this person. And so she went to see that person. No, he said, well, let me see your security clearance. And she said, I have it from the top. I have security clearance from the top. And he called the warden. And he was talking to the warden, and he looked at her, and he winked, and he says, go right ahead. She had it from the top. She didn't know why she was supposed to be in Walla Walla. She went to visit this prisoner who she didn't really know, and he said, she'd already decided not to visit the other one because the Lord kept telling her to visit this other one. And she was in Portland most of the day, and it was like, what am I doing here in Walla Walla? Except the Lord told me to come to Walla Walla. And she went into that prison cell, and she spent 3 hours with that man. And he said, you know, he said, I decided to turn. Help me with the story. You were there. Turn state evidence, and I'm now known as a rat. And there, he said, I've been awake for 3 days. 3 days ago, I turned state evidence. And I've been awake for 3 days because if I go to sleep, someone's going to kill me. And he said, I've been awake for 3 days, and I thought I can't take it anymore. I'm going to kill myself today. And he said, when I got a message that I had a visitor, little did he know it was a visitor who had signed another person's name first. He said, I couldn't believe it. I thought, who would be visiting me? And she came and presented Jesus Christ to that man. All because there was a supernatural intrusion in her life. What supernatural intrusions have you had in your life? Because you see, the supernatural intrusions show us the larger story. They show us that there's something more besides us. We're so busy looking at our little visible story. The greatest challenge of faith is to believe that more is happening than what we can see. We want to believe the visible. We live in the age of the fast food, the fast ATM, everything's fast, and we want it now. And if we don't get it in 5 minutes, we want it for free. Because we live in the day of the visible. And Hebrews 11:1 says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things. Right. And we as Christians are called to live faith. Not getting to see. To be a part of the invisible story. And we're called to live by faith. I was brought up on a Bible conference grounds. My parents bought a home on a Bible conference grounds 3 months before I was born because someone said to my dad, this kid, I told you that yesterday, come and we'll be like one you've never seen before. And the only safe place for her to be is a Bible conference grounds. Every week at the Bible conference grounds, they would have a campfire. And you didn't throw your faggots in the campfire. I mean, what do they call them? I mean, you know, that's what they called them. They did. They called them that, didn't they? It's little sticks. You get a little piece of wood and you throw your sins in. Anyhow, okay. Forget it that I even said it. Shows what I was brought up in, doesn't it? It was called, woo, narrow. Anyway, And they were going around the campfire and everyone was giving their favorite Bible verse. Now, my mother was orphaned when she was 9 years old. And my mother was raised by three ladies, a widow and her two spinster's daughters, and their last name was Bear. My mother was raised by the three bears. And her name is Helen. It's not even Goldilocks. And they lived at the cutest address. Wait till you hear this. They lived at 1234 West Market Street in York, Pennsylvania. Isn't that the cutest address for the three bears? 1234 West Market Street. And my mother was taken in by the three bears. And when she was 12 years old, she was working full-time in a hosiery mill down the street on Market Street. And I just assumed that my mother didn't know anything. Of course, I had the type of mother who kept an open Bible in the kitchen. Neighbor kids used to come to the front door, and they used to say, we need a glass of water. And I said, get it in your own house. It's across the street. You see, they wanted to come in my house to see my mother's Bible in the kitchen. And they would come to spy out. And you know, my mother didn't even have spaghetti sauce on her Bible. It was clean. See, she read it all the time as she was cooking, doing everything. My mother was reading the Bible. But I forgot that when I was 9 years old. And I was at the campgrounds and I thought, my mother is going to need help because it's going to come her turn and she's not going to know anything. So I started coughing and choking to give her an excuse to leave the campfire. And I coughed and I choked. And she would say, Rachel, get off the ground and sit in this bench and shape up. Quit your coughing. And I would say to myself, Mother, if only you knew what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help you. I was controlling back then. And I said, Mother, I just don't want you to be in this situation, I was thinking in my head, where you might be embarrassed. Now, forgetting that I taught in a nursery school where they knew the books of the Bible, by the time they were 3 years old, they knew 100 verses, but all I had to do was give out a title, a reference to a verse, and the kids would sing it like that. I had 100 of them, they did. Over 100 we did. And here was my mother, older than 3 years old, and I was assuming she couldn't memorize. And it came to her turn, and I was still choking, and I finally sat up. And it came to her turn, and she gave out a Bible verse. It was not what she called her favorite Bible verse, but she gave out a Bible verse, and I'll never forget it. It was Hebrews 11:1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Amazing that we are called to live by the invisible, and it's called faith. But we want to live by the visible, and we want to live out the visible story. The beginning tension to the seasons of my life could be I was sexually abused. The beginning tension to the season of my life could be to my story, and the season of my life could be I never wanted to be blackballed. So I never did any took any chances where I might be blackballed. The beginning tension for the Christian is never being blackballed. Never sexual abuse. Never an alcoholic parent. Never a husband who's left you. Never an affair. Never something that's troubling you. The beginning tension for the Christian is always God. Where do you stand with Him? Where are you with Him? You're out of the garden. Are you trying to get back in? Beginning tension is something ugly inside that we have to be forgiven of and overcome. Then we'll have unfading beauty of our inner spirit, gentle and quiet, where we're subject to one another because we see ourselves as bit players in the drama that is unfolding around us. Are you in what's happening? Are you part of what's happening? If you know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, you're in what's happening. There are three kinds of people in this world. There are those people who make things happen, those people who watch things happen, that group of people say, hey, what's happening? And we all fit in somewhere. We all fit in somewhere. Either we're people who are making things happen. It's like at a basketball game, and I'll talk about this tomorrow morning. There are very few people down there making things happen. They're bloody, they're sweaty, and they're tired. And God gives such good news to the prophets in the Old Testament when He says, you know you're going to get killed for this. You know your life's going to be miserable. When you go to the people of Anathol, you're going to be and tell them that they're going to die. You're going to die. And then God says to Jeremiah, keep on going. That's Elijah, excuse me. Anathol was Elijah. Keep on going. Keep on going. I have my people who are going to reflect my grace in the seasons of their life. Keep on going. You're a bit player, but you're all part of my plan. I'm the star, God says. You're not even a co-star. You're the bit player, but keep on going, because I have a plan for your life, and I want you to reflect beauty to those people around you, starting in your home and moving out. My home is my Samaria.
in the utter parts of the earth. We're to preach the gospel. What does that say in Acts? Acts 1:8 says, go with it, Marcia, my cheerleader. Preach the gospel, beginning with Jerusalem. Right, so it's not my Samaria, it's my Jerusalem. Beginning with Jerusalem.
But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, and all of Judea, and Samaria, Denver, and all of
the world. That's it! That's it! That's what it says. That's right. That's right. And there's a gal here from Elizabeth. Yes. Yes. We're to start at home. That verse should say, and we should preach it to Denver. Right. And other parts of the earth. Don't you love the word Jerusalem? I love the word Jerusalem. Did it for a missions conference one time. Had a missions conference, and we did Jerusalem. We had J-E-R-U-S-A-A-L-E-M. That was our missions conference. Just a little trick. We did that for 1976. Oh, I've been on more mission boards. Anyway, would anyone like to share right now a supernatural intrusion in their life? Tell us who you are, and you share. Is this on? Yes.
Hi, I'm Diana Zimmerman, and a supernatural intrusion is really neat. I've had lots of them, but the neatest one that I like is how I met my current husband. And I was going from a terrible 7-year marriage where I had to run away because I was going to be killed, and my husband was nuts. And so I ran out to California, and I was a rock performer. I was in a band. And I auditioned for my husband's spot, and I got it. And 5 months later, he called me up, and he asked me to go out. And strictly friends. And we went on the Matterhorn, and I'm scared to death of heights, and I didn't know it was high. And at the end of the ride, I was in his lap. And that's it.
So I want you to share about your son-in-law-to-be. That's supernatural intrusion in your life. Who'd you meet here at the church that you're going to share that with?
Every time I tell a story, I'm not sure I can get through it without crying.
Hankies? She even cries on the phone when she tells you.
Last spring, my husband and I decided to sponsor Frank and Ruth Ann Branham. And a lot of you guys know them. They were part of Foothills, so I don't know how that long they were here. But they were there with Overseas Christian Service Ministers. And Ruth Ann had been my Bible study leader for 2 years. We decided they were the ones that we wanted to sponsor. So we decided to give them X amount of dollars for a month. And then we had been praying in the meantime for my daughter's fiance, and he was not a believer. We were pretty nervous about that. And in May, I guess I should back up a little bit, Good Friday they announced their engagement and also announced that he was going to join the Army. So in May, he took off for boot camp in Oklahoma. And Frank and Ruth Ann in June took off for Fort Lewis, Washington, near Tacoma, which is where they were going to spend their next, which is their next assignment. And in September, Scott was sent to his permanent base in Fort Lewis, Washington. Of all the bases in this country that he could be sent to, he was sent to Fort Lewis, Washington. And I knew at that time that everything was under control, that he was taken care of. And Frank and Ruth Ann invited him for dinner a week ago Monday. And last Thursday night, Frank insisted that he was going to sit him down and talk to him. And at 12:30 in the morning, he called me and told me that he had accepted Christ. All because of the prayers of you guys. I can look out here to see women and see the people that have prayed for that boy. But God put those people into my life.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted her to share with you. I was looking for her earlier because I was going to prepare that I was going to call her up to share. Sorry, I couldn't find you. They're now getting married in December. She was to alter my dress for my son's wedding on January the 1st, and now she doesn't have time because she's making all the gowns for everyone, and my gown goes to pot. No consideration. What's her birthday? Anyone else? Have, oh, come on up, Nikki.
I feel like I've been here a lot today. I do want a ladder because I'm going to take a picture with my friend.
We maybe can find one for you.
Last year we came to IBC.
That's the Institute of Biblical Counseling. President and founder, and the director is Dr. Larry Crabb.
Yes. And it was a great year. And I'm going to cry. I've gotten good at that this year. But I got real close with a lot of girls. And I went from being dead to realizing what alive means. And at the end of the year, like a couple of you know, everybody leaves. It was hard, and it still is hard, and we left too, and I think it kind of made it easier. So we went to North Carolina, where we lived at a Christian youth sports camp, and it was great for our family. It was real hard on me, because there weren't any wives or any friends, and I came home on a Monday night from a trip to Florida. And Tuesday morning we talked. We didn't know where we wanted to go. And Tuesday night we left to come back. And when I came back, I thought, most of my friends are still involved in IBC. And I don't want to be an IBC groupie.
And we don't want you to be either.
It's really hard to do, though, because it's safe for us. And I just pray that the Lord would give me a friend. And he has provided a lot of friends, and a lot of them are still involved in IBC, and it's been wonderful. But one that he's surprising me with.
I think she ought to come up too. Come here, Pam. Pam's husband's a starting pitcher for the Rockies.
But Pam and I were in the youth group, and West Palm Beach, where we're both from, when we were younger. And she loved it, and I hated it. And she's the only person who knows me, who knew me then. And when we got here, we lived in a hotel for a while. And we were watching TV, and I said, it was a ball game on. And we could see the back of the picture. And I said, Dennis? I said, that's my husband. I told him not to tell it. I said, Dennis, I said, I think that's Kent, her husband. And he says, oh, no. That's the Rockies team, and Kent plays for Montreal, and I knew that. But I said, honey, I think it's Kent. And he said, oh, no, you're crazy. Let's go then. So we did. And a couple of days, or the next morning, we were in the paper, and my husband said, I can't believe it. They're playing the Montreal Expos, and they put Kent on the wrong team. It's true. And he said, he said, they have him down as pitcher for the Rockies. And we, oh, no, he pitches for Montreal. Isn't that funny? Ha, ha, ha. And we just kind of went on with life. And it happened again. And I said, honey.
And so we supernatural called, intrusions.
So we called Bill Rader, a mutual friend who had our dog, who's also a mutual friend. And He said Bill was Trent was traded to the Rockies, and we asked for their phone number, and, you know, they've got to kind of protect the players from everybody that says, oh, I know them. And so he met with Kent, and Kent's like, I know their dog, and I know them. So anyways, to make a long story short, I called. Did I call you, and you called me?
Yeah, we called because we got
interviewed. Yeah, they called us, left a message, and I came home one day just real down and lonely, and I played the message machine, which just brought great joy because we just got one. It was Pam, and she said, oh, we can't believe you're here. We're here, but we're leaving, and call us. And I called her up, and she said, in case you called, Kent, please some tickets, and you can come to the game today. It was the first time I've seen him since y'all got married. And the funny thing about the youth group is we never got close. I mean, we didn't even know each other. And I think what little we knew, we weren't really impressed. yeah, but it's true. And, we have since, she has been a trusted friend and a wonderful babysitter, children lover. And the last 3 weeks, we've spent so much time. We've kept this up late. They're on baseball schedules, which is crazy. They come over and play cards at 11 o'clock. And our kids get up at 7, you know. But even my jaw is shaking. Even though it's only been 2 or 3 weeks, I know the Lord put her here. And she's going to come back. she's going to West Palm Beach, so pray for her. I'm going to miss her. I just really see her as a spiritual kid. Mm-hmm.
She really is, isn't she? Her husband's name is Kent Bottenfield.
I'd like to say something, too, because it was an intrusion for us to even be here, because my husband, was in the minor leagues for 7 years, made it to the big leagues this year, and was a rookie, and was having a real hard time in Montreal, and it was getting just terrible. He was going to retire. I mean, I'm looking at this guy, 24, and he's going to retire. He couldn't take it anymore, and the pressure, and he just said, this little white ball is controlling my life, and he just said, you know, I can't be what I can be for God in this game, and all this, and I can't do anything for him, and he called a good, trusted friend, a baseball player who'd been in the game for 10 years, and the guy said, Kent, I have some news for you. God doesn't need you. He wants to perfect you, and he's working on you, and baseball is putting you through the fire, and it's bringing things out of you that nothing else ever will, and fast. And so anyway, we went on a retreat. Like, he and I just went down to bed and breakfast in Vermont because we had to get out of Canada because it was just so hard. And all we took was our Bibles, and we said, okay, we're going to, you know, baseball is secondary to anything else. God is going to be there. We got back, we got traded. And God, you know, God says he's not going to ever give you more than you can handle, and I just know he's taking care of us. And we're here now, and I'm just being so blessed. And I'm blessed by Nikki, too.
We could probably go on all night with supernatural intrusions. I hope you get the picture, because that's not your questions for your small group. But you know what? I don't even like your questions for the small group for tonight. You know what? The questions are they here? Are these yours, Cindy? Oh, I have this. Who is a man or woman who represented ugliness to you? Let's not talk about ugliness. Skip that. Core leaders, I mean, you don't even have time for core group. We just sort of did our whole share tonight. Now, Olivia, well, now Sharon's here, so Olivia doesn't have to make the decision. Sharon, you have to make the decision, because I tell you, I was just a little long-winded tonight. It must have been that chocolate pie. But that's not a good question. Cindy, these are your questions. Let's pray. I don't want you to think about a person who's been ugly in your life. I was thinking about my parents had a real good friend. I won't tell you her name. But she was so controlling that when her son was born on the 25th of August, I was born on the 3rd of August, she was so sure we were going to marry each other that she had pictures of us. She had a scrapbook of this guy and me, Carl. Larry talks about Carl periodically. Carl. She had a scrapbook of Carl and me from being in the crib together. She put us in the crib together, took pictures of us. She had pictures of us all over. No, I mean, you know. And when I think of a person who did not show beauty, she's with the Lord now, so she's beautiful. But do you know, isn't it somehow someone like that comes to mind, how controlling she was? She told me from the time I was old enough to think that Carl and I were going to be married. And she hated Larry because he interfered in her life. She had a plan for her life, and the plan was that Carl and I would be married because we were born so close together and we were just such good friends. Our parents were friends, and it was just going to be the perfect little setup. I don't know what she did with the scrapbooks when Larry and I got married, but Larry and I dated from the time we were 12. I dated Carl before that. But I don't know what happened. But something happened. Lord, you're in charge. We try to be. You kicked us out of the garden, along with our relatives, Adam and Eve. And we keep trying to get back into that garden. We keep trying to build our city when you told us you're building a city for us. And you say, I love you anyway. Even when you're contentious, even when you're vexing, you say to us, I've loved you so much that I became God, man, Jesus, and I went to that cross to die on that cross to take away your sin of being vexing, your sin of being contentious, your sin of being in control, being disobedient to me, building your own city. Oh, Father, forgive us. And help us to look onto the larger story and see that you've been making supernatural intrusions into our lives. And we know that we couldn't plan some of the things that have happened in our lives. It had to come from your good hand. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We love you. And we want to serve you by playing our bit part as women who reflect beauty in this larger story. For it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.